Well, if you've got a Bible in front of you, can you turn to Matthew chapter 13? We've been working our way through the parables in Matthew chapter 13, and we're up to verses 44 to 46. If you haven't noticed this, I'm not going to cover the parable of the mustard seed, and the reason for that is that Matt Rees preached on that just a few weeks ago on a Sunday morning here. And so if you want to study the parable of the mustard seed, he did an excellent job of it. The sermon's on the website. You can listen to that there. So I'm not going to cover that one again so soon. So Matthew 13, I'm just going to read verses 44 to 46. These two very short parables. Matthew 13, verse 44. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like treasure hidden in a field, which a man found and hid. And for joy over it, he goes and sells all that he has and buys that field. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant seeking beautiful pearls, who, when he had found one pearl of great price, went and sold all that he had and bought it. A few years ago, back in 2014, there was a couple in California who were out walking their dog. It was on their own property, as it so happens. And as they were walking along this dirt path, they saw something poking out of the path in front of them. It was a rusty tin can. And when they dug it up, they discovered, actually, there were lots of these tin cans, and they were all full of gold coins. They kept on digging. They found 1,400 coins. They were all dated from the California Gold Rush, so you know the mid-1800s, and they were worth many millions of pounds. They'd stumbled across buried treasure. And all they'd been doing is they'd been out for a walk, walking their dog. And I suspect they were having a lovely walk, enjoying a nice conversation, beautiful, nice day, I guess. But I also guess that that walk never got finished. They were doing some sort of circular route. I expect that the moment they saw that first glint of gold, that walk just went out the window completely. And I bet after they'd had the excitement of finding this treasure and they did everything, they made phone calls, whatever, and they sat down at the end of the day, do you know, I bet they didn't sit there and say to each other, shame about that walk, wasn't it? Shame we didn't get to finish our perfectly good walk and that nice conversation we were having and throwing that stick for the dog. I'm sure they were quite happy to abandon the walk. The only way they could ever feel resentful about not finishing that stroll they were on is if they'd completely forgotten about what it is they'd actually just dug up in the ground. Now, in a nutshell, that I think illustrates, I hope, that the purpose of these two parables we're thinking about this morning, that there is a sacrifice in entering the kingdom of heaven. They didn't finish that walk. But when you keep your eyes focused on the treasure, you know it's going to be worth it. So let's just go through these parables firstly. Just before we draw any lessons out of them, we'll just think about the parables themselves for a moment. So firstly, there's the parable of the hidden treasure in verse 44. So here we have a man who's outside. Presumably he's digging, going about his daily business. Maybe he's digging for a fence post or something practical like that. But the point is, this isn't someone who's got his metal detector out going up and down the field. He's digging. And we have to take it that he's allowed to dig there as well, that he's not doing anything unethical here. But as he's there, in this field, all of a sudden he strikes gold. He finds this treasure that's been hidden in a field. Now, it does happen today, but it's very rare, isn't it? You know, your chances of going out and digging in a field of finding treasure are very, very low. Well, it was still low in those days, but it was higher than it is today, because back then, you know, they didn't have banks with vaults with, you know, eye recognition and fingerprints, you know, all the sort of security measures we have today. And actually, if your country was about to be attacked and you could see the enemy on the horizon, or if you just had someone you thought was out to get you and steal your stuff, this is what you did. You buried your stuff, your valuable possessions, in the ground. Makes sense, doesn't it? You just remember where it is you've hidden it. So what does this man do when he finds the treasure? Well, he covers it up, and it says, for joy, he goes and sells all he has and buys the field. I guess it must be a bit like that sort of that moment of excitement. Not that I've ever had this myself. Imagine you're in a charity shop or a second-hand bookshop. You're rooting through the books. You find a book by one of your favourite authors, and you pull it out and you open the front page, and it's a signed copy. That moment of, oh yes, I'm going to go and buy it. Now, secondly, there's the parable of the pearl of great price. This parable is very similar to the first one, but there are a couple of differences. I suppose, firstly, that we're told what the treasure itself actually is here, that it's a pearl, a single pearl. Now, pearls are much more common today than they were back then. If you think about how you get pearls, back then it involved people diving down, holding their breath for minutes on end, sometimes tying stones to them as to pull them down far enough to, you know, this was dangerous work. There weren't many pearls about like there are today. It's not just that this pearl is rare, no, and being rare obviously makes it expensive, but it's not just that it makes it expensive. A pearl is a thing of great beauty, isn't it? You know, you can get some incredible pearls. You can get pearls the size of golf balls that are really heavy and weighty, and they're very smooth to hold. And I can sort of imagine there must be just a very nice pleasure of holding this heavy pearl, just sort of smoothly having it in your hands. Sounds very nice, doesn't it? Well, this man goes and buys pearls, presumably as a job, because he's a merchant. Maybe that means he buys them and then sells them on again at a profit. But this isn't just pure business thinking from him here. There's clearly pleasure involved in this line of work for him. He clearly is someone who loves pearls. So one of the differences between the two parables is here's someone who is actively looking for treasure. The first guy just found it by chance as he was going about his daily business. Here's someone who is searching. And when he finally finds what it is he's been looking for, then he goes and sells everything else. You know, his business assets, his other pearls, his home, his clothes, maybe even his hat with a feather sticking out of it. You get the point. That one pearl worth more than everything else he owns put together. Now, if you talk to any half-decent financial advisor, what they will tell you is what these people here are doing isn't good. It's not a good investment strategy. Because actually, if you're going to invest, the one thing you don't do is you don't put all your eggs in one basket. You diversify, invest in lots of different areas. That's a good investment strategy. Here, they're putting all their eggs in the one basket. This guy is buying the one pearl at the expense of everything else. Well, these parables, I think, are pretty easy to understand as stories, as basic parables. It's easy to understand what's going on here. But what's Jesus actually teaching? And here's one sentence which I think will summarise it for us. Jesus is teaching this: sacrifice is necessary to get the treasure of Jesus Christ, but it's infinitely worth it because you get the treasure of Jesus Christ. Now let's think a bit about what Jesus is doing at this point. We've said in previous weeks, and the same is true today, that at this point, Jesus is speaking privately to his disciples. It's back in verse 36 that he sends the crowd that he has been speaking to away. And the disciples come to him and they ask him to explain one of the other parables, the parable of the wheat and the weeds, to him. But at this point, he's still just speaking to his close disciples. So he's going to be speaking to people like Peter and Andrew. Remember how Peter and Andrew started to follow Jesus? They were just getting on with their job of fishing in the sea. And Jesus says, come follow me. And they leave their nets and off they go. He's speaking to people like James and John. They were there as well. They were actually mending their nets, getting ready to fish again. And they leave behind their boat. It actually says they leave their dad behind as well. And off they go. He He's speaking to people like Matthew. Matthew's a tax collector. And he was just sitting there in his tax office, his little sort of booth, and Jesus calls him, and off he goes as well. He leaves his job, you know, his wealth behind him, and off he goes. See, one of the reasons I read Matthew chapter 19 earlier on this morning. So Matthew 19, verse 27, Peter says to Jesus, "Jesus, we have left all behind to follow you." This isn't hyperbole. Peter's not exaggerating here. When he says, "Look, we disciples, we've left everything behind to follow you," they really have. They've left all sorts of things behind. And think at its most immediate level, those disciples are the man digging in the fields, the merchant who's found this pearl. Yeah, perhaps some of them have been searching for something, but others of them have just, you know, stumbled across Jesus in their path. Or rather, to put it differently, Jesus has walked into their path. You know, they've left behind their daily work, fishing or other things. They left their boat behind. They're not going to see their families as much now. But they found Jesus instead, this pearl of great price. What's going to happen for these disciples? See, this is one of the benefits of, you know, we know how the story ends for them, don't we? We can follow their lives through the New Testament. We can see what happens. And one of the things that happens for them is they face great difficulties. Their faith is going to be stretched and put under pressure. They gave up things when they started following Jesus, but actually that's just going to keep on happening throughout their lives. They're going to find themselves on the opposite side to the elite religious and political leaders of the day. They're not going to be part of the mainstream. They're not going to be popular. They're not going to be in with the in crowd. In fact, they're following a man who the crowds are going to scream, "Crucify him! Crucify him! We want that man dead!" And that's the man they've chosen to follow. There are going to be sacrifices throughout their life. Things that are going to be tough. And in fact, as they go on through life, some of them are going to suffer themselves physically. And some of them are going to be killed because they follow this man, Jesus. Now remember, they're human, okay? These disciples are just like you and me in all sorts of ways. They are mere people. And there are going to be times for them, because this is how I think we would be if we were in their shoes, there are going to be times for them where they just question, is it all worth it? And I think you get a hint of that with that question Peter is asking. Peter says, this is Matthew 19:27 again, when he says, "Look, we've left everything behind to follow you," what he then says is, "Therefore, what shall we have?" In other words, look, we've left all these things behind. We've given our lives to you. What do we get from all of this? What do we gain? But when he asks that question, either he's not understood or he's forgotten just what a treasure it is he has gained. So you notice Jesus' response to that question in Matthew 19. He says, look, you're going to be rulers of a kingdom, sitting on thrones. He was talking about the future of heaven for them, how they're going to rule in heaven. They're going to be given wonderful responsibility and privileges and honour. He says in Matthew 19, verse 29, he says, look, whatever you've left behind, you're going to receive 100 times much of blessing and eternal life as well. And Jesus says in the parable, the kingdom of heaven is like treasure. The treasure Jesus is talking about is the kingdom of heaven. But when we talk about that, if I start talking to you about the kingdom of heaven, you always start thinking, it feels a bit hard to put my finger on. What actually is the kingdom of heaven? Well, those of us who, Tuesday night, we started this Bible overview. And those of you who are here for that, you'll have heard a little bit about God's kingdom. We've started to learn about that because it's something that runs right way through the Bible, this this theme. And what we learned on Tuesday night, and this is, yeah, this is a plug if you would like to come Tuesday nights, it is a great course, an overview of the Bible from end to end. What we learned, one of the things we learned about is that being in the kingdom of heaven, the kingdom means that you are God's people, in God's place, under his rule, knowing his blessing. Let's think about those four things, because they help us understand what the kingdom of heaven is all about. So firstly, if you're in the kingdom of heaven, it means you're God's people. You're one of God's people. It means you actually know God. Now, I know you might have heard that before, but stop and think about what that really means for a moment. There are billions of people in this world, many, many people, but we know him. We can talk to God right now. And there's never a time when the phone line is busy and you get an engaged tone. It means he loves us deeply. He cares for us intimately. He talks about us as being his children. There's a care, as a most loving father treats his sons and daughters. That's the picture we're given. It means he protects us. We are under his protection. It means he guides us. It means he's committed to working things out for our good. So God's people. Being in the kingdom of heaven means we're in God's place. And for us today, we're talking about the church and all the blessings God pours into our lives through his church. That we have a group of people who care for us, who love us, who spur each other on to walk faithful lives. God's people, God's place, under his rule. Now, there are some people we would not want to have as our rulers, are there? There are some people, you might be able to think of people you know, and you think, I am so glad that person is not my boss at work, because it would be a nightmare. Imagine them having some power. Imagine them getting to tell people what to do. It would be awful. It'd be so either uncaring or so much of a tyrant, you know, so rude. When you think about God's rule in his kingdom, it's a wonderful rule, full of forgiveness and grace. Yes, he's sovereign. He really does rule, but it's personal. It's intimate. He rules with perfect justice. Every other ruler in this whole world makes mistakes, and they do things that are unwise, and they create, or they don't solve, unjust situations. God's always just and fair in his kingdom. Being under God's rule means we're protected. If you think about it, that's the picture here is of a king and his subjects. And the king's job is to protect his country. Go to war, defend you from the enemies. That's our king we have. Because we're under his rule. And fourthly, being in the kingdom of heaven means we receive his blessing. Just think for a moment about the spiritual blessings you receive if you're a Christian from the hand of God. The peace that comes from knowing your future. I don't mean knowing what's going to happen tomorrow. I don't mean knowing how many more days you've got until you die. I don't mean all those sorts of things, but you know where you're going. If you're a Christian, you know the big picture of what's going to happen in your life. We sang that hymn a moment ago about Jesus being our brother. You know, someone who's, because he's a man, he relates, he understands us. Our shepherd, a good shepherd who cares for us, guides us, protects us from the wolves. Our prophet, the one who speaks to us and teaches us. Our priest, the one who brings us near to God. And our king. We have the privilege of the Holy Spirit, of God himself living in us, giving us God's power, teaching us, leading us in the way of truth, giving us words to say when we just don't know what to say ourselves. All these blessings that flow from Jesus Christ. And you know, I could just go on and on along these lines. We could keep on talking more and more about the blessings we receive as God's people from him. But I guess here's the point with this parable. There are going to be those times for these disciples when they're going to look at the things they've left behind. You know, they're travelling from place to place with Jesus, and sleeping in a different place every night, not seeing so much of their families. They've given up stable jobs to be committed to following him day in, day out. There are going to be times after Jesus goes when they're going to sort of take up the mantle, and they're going to stand up and preach. And what's going to happen as they say, look, this Jesus, he's been raised from the dead. He really is the king. And people are going to mock them and laugh at them. They're going to be put in prison. And some of them are going to be killed. And the temptation's going to be, surely, does he, what am I doing? What am I doing here with all this? And in these parables, Jesus is preparing them for those moments, that time when they think, what am I doing here? He's preparing them by saying to them, don't focus your attention on the things you've left behind. Fix your eyes on the treasure. Remember that pearl that's so smooth. The weight, the preciousness. Remember what you gained when you entered the kingdom of heaven, because it's so much more substantial and weighty and glorious than anything you've had to leave behind in order to enter that kingdom. Think about a parent with a newborn baby. Up in the night until 4 a.m. Not that long ago I was doing this. I still remember it vividly. Up in the night with a baby that just won't stop screaming, pacing up and down the room, trying to rock this baby to sleep, round and round the coffee table, mile after mile, hour after hour, and this screaming baby won't be quiet. What do you do in those moments? What does the parent do? Well, they don't just abandon the baby, do they? That's not what we do. What we do is we remind ourselves why it's worth it. As you're walking up and down with this screaming thing looking back up at you that you just can't get quiet, and you're totally exhausted from doing this night after night, you think of those moments when this baby is just quiet, looking up at you. You think of that first smile you've got, that first time that baby connects with you. Think of that time when that baby wraps its fingers around, those tiny little fingers around your little finger, and just holds on to you. You think of that pride you feel. This is my child. Isn't this wonderful? And you look forward to all those moments you're going to have with that baby. This boy that's going to grow up, and you're going to do jigsaw puzzles, and you're going to teach him to ride a bike, and you're going to take him to football practice, and then you're going to take him, all these wonderful plans you have. It's the remembering the preciousness of that that makes the sacrifice worthwhile. So the sacrifice is in view in both these parables. You've got this man who's digging in this field. Well, it says he sells all he has to buy the field. It's the same with the man with the pearl. He went and sold all that he had and bought it. Becoming a Christian, entering the kingdom of heaven, it means recognising that Jesus is king. Yeah, that is the picture again, isn't it? A kingdom means there is a king, and entering that kingdom means we become one of his subjects. And that means recognising this is his world, he owns it, and it means relinquishing the right to possess anything. But do you know what happens very often, because God is so kind and good to us, is once we've done that, once we've relinquished the right to those things, he gives so many of those things back to us because that principle has been established. Some people, many of us aren't called to give up 99% of our savings. That's not what God actually calls us to do in most instances. But you saw the challenge he gave to that rich young ruler. Go, sell everything you have, and then follow me. Because he's establishing that principle. Who owns your money? Do you own it? Or does Jesus own it? who's the king in this world? And you know, if there are things in our life where we would say, Jesus isn't king over that part of my life, I would never give Jesus that, then it means there's still that area of our life where we need to submit to him as king, king in our lives. So I think if you're not a Christian here this morning, being a Christian is, in a sense, becoming a Christian is very easy. Because all you have to do is bow the knee to Jesus Christ. Turn to him. Recognise that he is the King, the Lord. But you do it knowing, yeah, actually, there is a sense in which I am yielding here. I'm giving him charge of my life. And this is something Jesus talks about lots. Even just in the book of Matthew. For example, Matthew 8, verse 18 onwards, you've got someone who comes up to Jesus and says, Jesus, Lord, let me first go and bury my father. Listen to what Jesus says, follow me and let the dead bury their own dead. And he's not saying that because he doesn't care about funerals or the mourning and grieving process this man's going through, but rather he's sort of laying down a challenge. What comes first for you here? In Matthew chapter 10, verse 27, he who loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me, and he who loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. Again, he's not saying cut yourself off from your family or anything like that. It's that key principle. Who's king? Who is the king here? Account of the rich young ruler. Go and sell what you have. Give it to the poor. But he goes away sad. Why is he sad? Well, because he won't let Jesus take charge of his finances. Jesus there was exposing his heart. For that man, he just loved money more than he loved Jesus. Being a Christian isn't just about believing the right things. You know, believing in God, believing that Jesus is real, believing that he died and rose again. Although those things are necessary, we do need to believe those things. They are true. It's not even about following the right sort of morality of the Bible. You know, being someone who tries not to steal or lie. Those sorts of things. Again, those are good things. It's hearing Jesus say, so this is Matthew 16, verse 24. If anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever desires to save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake will follow it. I can think of a Christian I've met from a Muslim background who came to follow Jesus Christ. And his family deserted him, community ostracized him. For him, that was the sacrifice Jesus called him to make. Think of a Christian I know who left his country, never come back since. His life would be in danger if he went back. That was a sacrifice for him. His homeland. It was either his homeland or either prison or who knows what else. You know, there are some Christians, and we call them martyrs, who are actually called for their lives are taken. Now, for most of us, Jesus does not demand those things of us. I don't know what he does demand of you. It will be different for each of us. But I think the question for us is, are there things standing between us and him? Are there things we just won't let go of? At the end of the day, though, the message of this parable, the big message, is the same for all of us. Yes, we've talked about the sacrifice, but don't focus on that. Sometimes it can feel so big. This is a bit like you're standing at the bottom of Mount Everest, and you're thinking, how could I ever climb that? This huge mountain looms on the horizon. And that's because we're looking at the sacrifice. We're thinking about that. But think that the point of these two parables, think of these two people and what they find, what they're thinking about. They're excited about what they found. They've uncovered this great treasure. They've discovered the pearl of great price. So that's why the man in the field that says, for joy, goes and sells what he has. Because that's what he's thinking about. It's that great final picture we showed the children, that man clicking his heels together, running off, so overjoyed with what he's gained. And that joy is possible because, you know, this isn't a bad deal here. That merchant doesn't think he's getting ripped off in what he's gaining. He's getting a bargain. That man buying the field, it's the best transaction he's ever going to do in his life. Yeah, he has to pay something, he has to hand over some money for the field, but look what he gets in return. And there will be times for God's people where we might wish we could have a religion that didn't cost us anything. But that's when we keep looking at the pearl. Keep reminding ourselves of what we have gained in having Jesus Christ. Because Jesus says the kingdom of heaven is like treasure. It means we're God's people. We're his children, been adopted. We've been redeemed, bought back, been ransomed. We've been forgiven. We've been made right with God. We've been purified. We're being prepared for a wonderful world in heaven. Our guilt has been washed away. The shame of our wrongdoing has been removed. And we know Jesus Christ. We know our Maker. And we know him as our friend. It means we know the person who loves us more deeply than any other person does. The man, Jesus, who never breaks his promises, who never lets us down, who never forgets. The man who gives us that guarantee, whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. He promises real life. This is Jesus, who is the bread of life, who feeds us until we want no more. The man who protects us from our enemies and will take us home to be with him. So yeah, the sacrifice is real. We recognise, don't we, when we come to him, it means he's the king. It means everything we have is on loan from him. But the calling of these parables is keep on looking at the pearl. Keep your eyes fixed on the treasure and you'll find you can live a life of joy as well, just like these people do in the parable, because you're storing up treasure in heaven. We're going to sing a hymn to close. It's number 156. And this hymn starts by saying, I've found the pearl of greatest price. My heart does sing for joy. And sing I must, for Christ is mine. Christ shall my song employ. We'll stand and sing 156.